Everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Mavericks throw a third quarter lump of coal in the Lakers' stocking. They lose 124-115, and things are not looking good. That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts, always free, never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show and see our frustration and irritation at how the Lakers have been playing over the last few days. Thanks to everybody for helping push that channel up near 10,000 subscribers. Great community of people who will all be awfully honked for Monday after the Lakers. I don't want to say ruined Christmas, Andy, and we had a lovely day. We're not going to let one basketball game ruin our Christmases and our holiday weekends. But if you were that kind of person, that game would have ruined your holiday.
Yeah, 124-115 loss to the Mavericks, and really, by the time the game was really in hand for Dallas, it didn't play out as closely as a single-digit nope. loss would make it seem. You mentioned, Brian, at the top of the show, 51-point third quarter for Dallas, a franchise-tying third quarter or any quarter point tally in Dallas Mavericks history. It was a barrage of ball movement and threes going down, and the Lakers unable to score in response at all. And the Lakers entered this game with the fourth worst third quarter net rating in the league. And I got a feeling that number has fallen after this particular
game. I mean, look, it wasn't just that they gave up the 51, which is, by the way, not good. It's that they only scored 21. They were minus 30 in the third quarter. It is so hard to be minus 30 in an NBA game in one quarter. Like, you almost have to be trying. I will say this. They say, Andy, if you're going to do anything worth doing is worth doing well. I think I saw on Spectrum, and I may be getting this slightly wrong, the Lakers haven't had a minus 30 quarter since the 1950s.
I mean, to put this in perspective, you're talking about a 30-point gap. 30 points in a quarter ain't that bad. Like, if you just put up 30 points in a quarter, you know, you could do a little better, but you're not thinking, oh, wow, we're struggling in this quarter.
No, like it's a 120. You're on pace for 120 points. It's perfectly respectable.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers.
Just that gap in and of itself speaks to how hard it is to make something like that happen.
You know, this was a game, and you know, we're going to get to Anthony Davis. The Lakers put out an update on his health, got a little bit of clarity, at least in the sense that we know it is a stress injury. I mean, that's a good way of putting it, but it's a stress injury. He'll be reevaluated when it is appropriate. But we'll talk more about that. But in terms
Laker
of
fans are suffering a stress injury right now. Ooh.
Oh, and I mean, Friday's game was even worse than this one. But anyway, like, the Lakers were up by 11, I believe it was, at halftime.
Yes, they were.
And I did at least. And I know we were texting about this a little bit after the game. Like, Dallas only scored 43 points in the first half. Lakers were up by 11. I was thinking, like, that isn't good enough. Like, they needed to be up by more than that, because part of the reason the Mavericks were scoring and the Lakers were doing their best on Luka, and they were making his life harder, and I don't think Luka was even able to take a shot until like the first five minutes.
Luka did not score a basket until the first 8 minutes of the first quarter passed.
The Lakers were aggressively doubling him, aggressively trying to take the ball out of his hands, which is a perfectly reasonable strategy, and hoping Dallas would miss shots, and they did. That strategy, though, doesn't last forever. Luka, at least offensively, is a little bit like LeBron in the sense that he is a basketball robot who, you know, takes in information and improves over the course of a game, and he learns. And in the second half, the Lakers continued to try to aggressively double. Luka started moving the ball even better while finding ways to score himself. And the supporting cast nailed every three-pointer they took. They hit 9 of 12 in the third quarter, and that was basically your ball game.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas shot, I believe it was 23% in the first half from three, but it was much more Dallas missing wide-open shots.
Correct.
Than the Lakers doing a particularly good job defending them. So that was in and of itself a sign that, like, okay, things seem like they could be in the process of turning. And then in the meantime, when you mentioned how it felt like they should have been up more at the half, given that Dallas only scored 43 points, the Lakers opened the game with a three-point corner shot from Lonnie Walker. They went the entire first quarter and some change before they made their next three, which again came from Lonnie. So they got out to a really good start in terms of attacking the basket. They had 14 points in the paint before the first 5 minutes of the first quarter had gone by. Like, they were doing a really good job trying to work that advantage. But even while maintaining a lead, you could see signs of the Lakers' offense starting to stall out.
Oh, it was bad. It was bad.
Well before things absolutely fell apart in the third quarter.
And, you know, look, none of this is a surprise. You know, Anthony Davis out, you know, we spent the first half of the season talking about how this team was really struggling offensively. And they started to pick it up a little bit, found a little bit of rhythm when they started to hit some shots. Anthony Davis, obviously going nuclear, picks up the offense considerably. Well, he's gone now. LeBron, you know, as he did on Friday, played a very good game on Friday, played an excellent game on Christmas, 38 points on 13 of 23 from the floor, 12 of 12 from the line. He did miss all 4 three-pointers, which, okay, you know, that's the blemish there. 6 rebounds, 5 assists, could have been a lot more than that. Didn't get a lot of help there. He was a +2. So they basically won the LeBron minutes, the 34 minutes that LeBron played, and got hammered in every minute that he didn't. They can't ask LeBron to do more than he is offensively. This is the most that you can expect to get from LeBron. They cannot score. Like, they're back to being a bad offensive team. And even against a bad defensive team, Friday night, I guess they did a little bit better offensively, still were terrible in the clutch. You know, they are going to have these moments if the supporting cast isn't really cooking, or they're just not playing a terrible defensive team like Charlotte, where points are hard to come by. And meanwhile, Andy, they can't stop anyone either.
Yeah, in terms of LeBron's supporting cast, Russ and Austin Reeves were the only guys who hit double digits besides LeBron. And even then, it was herky-jerky. You had Russ scoring, I believe it was 14 points in either 12 or 14 points in the first half of his 17. Pretty quiet in the second half. Austin Reeves finishes with 16 points, but I believe 14 of them were in the second half. You're not getting steady help from either one of those guys. And then, like mentioned, from there, nobody else was in double digits at all.
16 points between Schroeder and Lonnie Walker, who are supposed to be, you know, they are in the NBA because they're considered, you know, scoring type guys. And, you know, you have, you know, to his credit, Thomas Bryant, I don't think is healthy after that shoulder injury that he suffered on Friday against the Hornets. He had 8 points in 19 minutes, 4 or 5 from the floor. But again, I don't think he was healthy. But you have one starter in double digits, like, when and two of them are Dennis Schroeder and Lonnie Walker. Like, that's not going to work.
The four other starters took as many shots, 23 combined, as LeBron took. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can go back and watch this thing. Maybe there was a few times where LeBron was looking off guys because he's either in the groove or he's really feeling like, we have to win this effing game. and I'm going to put this one on my shoulders. Like, I don't think LeBron, to be clear, I don't think LeBron took a lot of bad shots in this game. I actually thought LeBron's shot selection in this game,
it was quite good. Quite good.
Very good. So I'm not even bringing this up as a potential criticism of anybody, as much as I'm just talking about those guys not even really taking a lot of shots and for whatever reason, not really becoming much of an offensive factor at all.
All right. So one of the major talking points, in addition to like what the hell are the Lakers going to do in this indefinite and extraordinarily undefined period where Anthony Davis isn't available to them. One of the major talking points were centered around Darvin Ham's lineup choices. At one point in the fourth quarter, he played five guards, went out with a five-guard lineup with Russell Westbrook as your quasi-center.
By the way, that's how Kendrick Nunn just knows he is not in this rotation because five guards out there and none of them were named.
He ain't one of them.
Nope. he is out, baby.
You know what? I'll save this other point because what you're saying about Kendrick is true. And there's another point that's staggering about this that is worth noting. We'll get to all this after the break because it was a massive, massive talking point. So that's next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional amateur league out there, from football to basketball, bowl season, esports. They got it all over at betonline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, which obviously you do because you are learning about BetOnline in a sports podcast, you can find those at BetOnline as well. They got content over there. Always the fastest, easiest way to get your betting fix. So head to the website today or use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
So your point, Andy, about Kendrick Nunn is a very good one. You're right. I mean, you are buried if you can't make the floor on a five guard lineup. But I'd also like to point out it is indicative of the incredible roster imbalance that the Lakers have, that they're playing a five guard lineup and have like two or three spares that still can't make the floor. Like, you'd think if you were doing that, like all of your guards would be on the floor. No, they've still got some left over. They've got some in the back pocket there. And that I do think is relevant to the conversation we're going to have, which is Darvin Ham's lineup choices. They were a big part of the post-game chit-chat. They were a big part of what people were talking about on Twitter, especially when they went to that five-guard lineup in the fourth quarter.
Five-man acoustical jam. Yes. that got a lot of reaction over at Twitter. As I tweeted out at Cam Brothers, everything is bigger in Texas. My ass, says Darvin Ham.
We're going to get real small here, people. So Darvin Ham was actually asked a question, and then he was asked a follow-up, really, about this, both about the lineups and what they were doing, how they're going to fill that hole with AD. And I know you actually, you got out the old typewriter and wrote it down. So yeah. Darvin asked about the five-guard lineup said.
Well, he was asked, you know, that inclination to go with that lineup, and you know, especially when he seems to be looking for a push defensively, like are you looking for Dennis and Beverly to get up under their assignments, try to be disruptive that way? And Darvin said, quote, just trying to get more possessions in the game. When you go small like that, any of those guys can get a defensive rebound and push it, and you're trying to play fast, trying to attack downhill, trying to put the other team on their heels, put them in the position where they're following, and they can use the free throw line to try to help you get back in the game or sustain a lead. That's something we're going to explore. And aside from being down double digits, it's something that I think we'll explore more earlier in the game. It's just trying to play faster. And at the end of the day, amongst other things, having tough physical perimeter players that can switch and can slow down with the schemes and just try 1 through 5, switch more with like size matchups. But the main goal is being able to play faster and be able to attack the paint more.
Okay. I know, like, we were making jokes while it was happening after the game, and even again on Twitter, like, whoa, that's a lot of guards. What is your reaction to trying that? Because in the first part of that question, like, because that was the follow up, which is like, hey, from the media, like, we need a little more information about what you're talking about here, like what you're doing. And he said, you know, in his initial response, a lot of what they're doing, you know, is trying stuff. They, you know, they played Wenyan and Thomas Bryant together a little bit, and they tried LeBron at the five. He went with Russ at the five, which is this lineup that he was talking about. And he actually used, it's like throwing, he's used this expression, throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. That lineup didn't stick, but nothing that they threw at the wall in this game particularly did. So what do you think about that answer to that question?
I understand what he means. I think he's doing it too extreme. Like, for example, that, you know, he said like switching more with like-size matchups. Dallas had Christian Wood out there. That's not matching up with like-size guys. Like, you need to have either Wenyan out there or Thomas.
I don't think he meant, I think he meant matching up with like-size guys on his own team rather than on the other team.
Well,
like
whatever.
Just being able to take guys who are all about the same size and throw them at the other team.
Right, but part of what makes switching effective is that you are matching up against the opponent. It's not just matching up with each other. It's actually creating matchups that work when you are defending. So you need to be able to match up with, if not perfectly, with the other five guys out there. You need to have something that at least resembles matchups. And Christian Wood by himself, two baskets right up at the rim. I think one included an offensive rebound.
Yeah.
Where there was an offensive rebound.
No, there were possessions, especially in that fourth from the Lakers. Rebounding, as always, was a major problem. Right. On Friday, by the way.
That's too extreme in my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand it in principle. And again, I don't think there's no logic to it at all. But that's why I'm mentioning someone like Wenyan or Bryant or even Troy Brown. Hell, Max Christie, who's a really good rebounder, if nothing else. Like, it's just too small. And Darvin, as much as he clearly likes trying to go small in either matching up or creating mismatches, and he's hardly the only coach around the league that likes to go small. The NBA as a whole has gone small. So it doesn't make him an outlier, but I think he often goes too extreme with it. I mean, we saw this, frankly, in the fourth quarter against Charlotte. Like, he was going too small for some of that matchup, and it really hurt the Lakers down the stretch. Like, I realized that, you know, he brought up the idea of being able to push off a rebound. Like, yeah, you're not going to have Wenyan Gabriel do that, but he might actually be more effective in getting that defensive rebound than a couple of the guards that you have out there. So,
yeah, I mean,
offensive rebound. You know, I mean,
no, completely. And I think, like, I am sympathetic. I think I'm more sympathetic to what I don't like the five guard lineup, but I also look at it and I'm looking at it off of a quarter where they just gave up 51 points. This is why I mentioned before, I would love to know exactly how healthy Bryant is.
Sure.
Because, you know, in his 18 minutes, he only had three rebounds. So it's not like, you know, he's solving that problem.
And he's hardly the switchiest defender in the world.
No. And so the Lakers are in a position right now where if they fall behind, they have nothing but bad options in front of them, other than put LeBron back in and see if he can get us back. They don't defend well enough. If you put your best, I guess, and best is a very relative term, your best offensive lineup out on the floor, it's very hard to defend well enough to get the stops that you need to close out a game. And we saw, you know, Friday they had opportunities because Charlotte's just that bad, but they didn't take advantage of it. And if you try to put somebody like Gabriel out there, or Gabriel with Bryant, or, you know, Troy Brown or some of these other guys, and he clearly does not like what he's seeing from Troy Brown. Like, just, you know, there were good moments at the beginning of the season, you know, when he was starting, and the shine seems to be sort of off that, whatever it was that they saw that they liked. They don't score enough. So if you put Wenyan out there and you're trying to catch up, he is not a good guy to have on the floor when you're chasing points. And the joke I was making about the guards earlier is relevant here, because you have Thomas Bryant, who has played well, but has limitations, as your backup center probably would. and maybe a little bit banged up. And that's it. That is your only other playable big in extended minutes, because Wenyen Gabriel, I like the guy a lot, but is a very limited player. That's all you have. Meanwhile, you have 2,000 guards who are hard to match up together, who are all kind of flawed, but theoretically are your best play. Like, I am more sympathetic to the plight that Darvin has of trying to just throw. I think the problem is they're in a position 33 games in, where they're still having to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. And I don't think he's wrong about that. Like, we're just trying everything here because what we're doing isn't working. We're 7 games under 500.
Sure. I understand that. I just think when specifically, like, for example, when we're talking about the going
today's
small
game. Yeah, that moment in today's game.
Well, no, this moment in today's game, but I think also it's not the first time that we have discussed or fans have discussed, you know, the Pat Bev, Dennis Schroeder, Russell Westbrook out there. Like, you know, the inclination to go as extremely small as Darvin has, you know, Max Christie only played 2 minutes in this game, for example. And, you know, unless he's hurt,
getting to one big criticism I do have.
Right. Like, Darvin's options are limited. Like, I totally agree with you that he does not have a lot of obvious choices, if any obvious choices, that he is totally ignoring. That being said, I think he is also limiting his choices while they are limited to begin with. I think he is, some of this is self-limiting and in ways that I don't think A, necessarily make the most sense, but B, they're clearly not working.
And I don't know where to go. I mean, my big criticism is, if you are not going to play Troy Brown, and clearly didn't want to, at least not in big minutes, in part because I think he just finds the off. I think it's just a lot of the same issues that other teams have had with Brown. You know, is 23 years old and is on his third team, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, drafted by Washington, moved to Chicago, never averaged more than, you know, he had one season where he averaged over 20 minutes a game until he got to LA this year. I would play Max Christie more. Sure. If you're not going to play Troy Brown, I would go ahead and try to play Christie more. It is a lot to put on a 19-year-old. You're going to get a lot of mistakes, but
they need,
he has shot the ball.
Somewhere.
He has shot the ball pretty well.
Yes.
And he does as good a job, I think, as the other guys. I mean, he's not, he's going to make
cooked
mistakes
by Luka, but I mean, join the rest of the league,
join the rest of the team. So let's talk about AD, and what the Lakers are looking at going forward. There's a lot still, you know, we can cover here. We can talk about the road trip a little bit as the Lakers head to Orlando for Tuesday, a game that has gotten a lot trickier as Orlando, I think, it's 1-8 of 10. But let's talk about AD, because it's the first chance we've had to talk since that update. So we'll get to that next.
All right. So you're hanging out with some friends and putting back some drinks, and a few becomes a few too many. And the evening comes to an end. People start heading out and you're thinking of calling for a ride. But then you're like, nah, I live nearby. I can make it home today. Like, it's not a big deal. And what are the odds that I'm going to get pulled over anyway? Even if I did, what's the worst that would happen? My insurance goes up. I lose my license, which could lead to losing my job, or maybe I total my car, or maybe I injure myself, someone else. Maybe I kill someone else. And you can see where this is going. Everyone knows the risk of drunk driving, and the results are real. They're tragic. They're often deadly. But that still doesn't stop people from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. And that's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads, especially during the holiday season. It is to save lives. So if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again, play it safe, plan ahead, get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over. Brought to you by NHTSA.
Okay, Andy. So this from Jovan Buha, kind of a statistical laying out of where the Lakers are. They are now 13-20. 1-4 since Anthony Davis's foot injury. They've allowed 124 or more in four of those five games. LeBron had 38 points today, and it wasn't anywhere near good enough. Lakers have four games left on the trip and need to stop their unraveling quickly. LeBron himself was asked about, you know, getting themselves out of this hole, climbing out of another hole. And he said, this is from Dan Wakey of the LA Times, how many times are you going to dig yourself out until you have too much dirt on you? Meaning you're just too far buried. This is all in the context of the Lakers finally releasing a sort of update on the state of Anthony Davis's foot. And it was kind of vague. We spent all week last week, Andy, wondering where this update was, and it came and it was on letterhead, and it technically was an update, but it was not the most informative thing in the world.
Yeah, this was the statement from the Lakers, quote, after extensive consultation with Lakers team physicians and outside specialists, it has been determined that Anthony Davis has a stress injury in his right foot. Davis will be out indefinitely. Further updates will be provided when appropriate. And should be noted, for what it's worth, Adrian Wojnarowski over at ESPN has reported that there's been some optimism that that this absence could be shorter than initially feared. He's going to be reevaluated apparently in 7 to 10 days. There's been some pain subsiding in that foot. He's been traveling a lot with the team, which, I mean, A, lets you know that altitude is not a problem for him.
So whatever it is that they're doing for him, whatever treatment, is something that can be done on the road.
Yeah, and also, for what it's worth, Friday when this statement was released, I was on 710 ESPN sitting in for John Ireland on the Mason and Ireland show, and Ramona Shelburne was sitting in with us for a little bit, and she's obviously as plugged in with the NBA and particularly with the Lakers as anybody. And she said, for what it's worth, that there's some optimism. Like they are more optimistic right now than they had been, you know, a week ago, you know, about his recovery, what exactly is going on, the idea. And this was something also that Woj specifically noted in his report, that a surgical procedure could be avoided. So there is some degree, apparently, of optimism coming from the building in El Segundo. That being said, the vagueness of it all, I'm not going to lie, it feels very shades of Kendrick Nunn. And I'm not suggesting that this is going to be as long and drawn out and ultimately catastrophic a thing as what went on with Nunn, but I'm just saying the really, really vague wording in all of this feels very Kendrick Nunn-ish.
And it's, I tell you, like, one of the things that we were talking about last week was that, you know, the delay implies that, like, it makes you think, are they going to get second opinions and third opinions? And clearly they were, because, you know, multiple physicians were checking in on this, which, you know, as certainly implied by the statement, and that explains in part the delay. And even when you start to hear things like, the Lakers are optimistic that Davis can avoid surgery, the Lakers are optimistic that it might be a shorter time on the sidelines than expected, and all these other things. Like, those are all things that are great, you know, but if, you know, there is optimism that he could might be able to avoid surgery, definitionally means, Andy, that there is a chance he's going to need surgery to fix this.
And or at the very least, they were worried about surgery.
If, you know, if they were so optimistic that he wasn't going to need surgery, they would say it's not an injury that's going to require surgery. There's optimism that he will avoid it, which, by the way, isn't something the Lakers have said. This is what's been sort of leaked. That says that there is a chance that he might. And
or they would just tell us what the hell the injury is, like stress injury. There's an interesting piece over at Silver Screen Roll written by Dr. I apologize in advance for butchering the name, Rajpal Brower, a doctorate in physical therapy from Northern Arizona University, runs his own.
Does a lot of their medical posts. So
exactly. And he pointed out in this video post that people should check out, like what exactly a stress injury is, why it can take a little bit long to sort of pinpoint, like you have to kind of go deeper into the foot, stuff like that. That being said, though, reading from his report, stress injury is still vague.
And look, what they're talking about with Davis very well maybe more detailed than what we're getting. I fully acknowledge
that. I suspect it is.
But there is still a strong sense of we're not entirely sure what is going on here, what the remedy is, or how long it's going to be before he comes back. And again, this is me, you know, armchair doctoring, which as a person with a podcast, I think is absolutely something I'm qualified to do. So I just want to make sure that's clear. It was on the spectrum of like, how did you feel after, like the pre-update versus post-update? It could have been worse. They could have said he's got a broken foot, he's out 2 months, and you know, whatever. I still see a lot of people saying, you know, this could be just the Lakers trying to keep leverage around, like, you know, so people don't think they're super desperate. Folks, no. The trades are going to be what they're going to be. The people are already going to hold the Lakers. Teams are going to already hold the Lakers over a barrel. It's a seller's market anyway. And people,
they lose all that leverage if they keep losing games anyway.
Correct. And like the assumption is going to be that the Lakers are desperate. There's not a whole lot of extra stuff to get the Lakers to give up. It's either give us the two picks or don't. Leave them unprotected or don't, and we'll just turn around and trade Bojan Bogdanović somewhere else if you don't like it. They're not, I don't think this is gamesmanship. This is not wanting to say it's a 6 week, an 8 week, a 10 week, a 12 week injury, because I don't think they know. And hopefully it's shorter. But you know, the Lakers are clearly not a good team without Anthony Davis in the lineup and without him playing the way he was. And I don't know what the fix is right away. Like, I don't, other than just buckle up and try to win. All I got are cliches, and maybe you have better ideas. Coaching staff clearly doesn't.
I mean, this is very broad and as non-specific as stress injury, but you just have to play at the top of your game. Mm-hmm. As much as possible. You cannot miss open shots. You cannot blow layups. You know, the Lakers did a good job in this game of not turning the ball over. Only eight. That is helpful. But, you know, against Charlotte, they turned the ball over 17 times, gave up 32 points in the process. Like, things like that simply cannot happen without AD.
And what you're talking about essentially is asking players to play at a level above where they have been for most of their careers, for most of these guys. And we'll see if it can happen.
Locked On Lakers on
YouTube. Right. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show, to experience the fast growing dynamic community of angry Lakers fans. We did not, by the way, get into the Genie Bus tweet. Maybe we'll do this for Tuesday.
Yeah.
In terms of measuring the mood of Lakers Nation right now, Jeannie Buss sent out a tweet just trying to say something nice, like thanks to Shaq for helping like support a great cause. And oh my God, the responses were insane. Like, inappropriate, but again, for measuring the temperature of where people are right now. So maybe we'll talk about that for Tuesday's show as Lakers get ready to play Orlando, and then Wednesday in Miami. So, yeah, that's all. See everyone Tuesday.